Well, Leah Daughtry, thank you so much for speaking with us. You're going to be the CEO of the Democratic Convention. Would you just briefly describe the job? What do you have to do?
Well, thank you, first of all, for having me on the program. I'm delighted to be here. I am privileged, honored to serve as the CEO for this convention. And, well, you know, putting together a convention, I'm responsible for every aspect of the planning. So everything from hotel rooms where the delegates stay, where the media stays, to the logistics of the operation, the transportation system that has to be created, to the creation of the credentialing system, working on the security system, to, of course, the show, the production of what people will see in the hall every night of the week during the convention, and then what delegates do during the day when they're not at the official proceeding. So I'm responsible ultimately for every aspect of convention planning and execution.
Okay, I'm exhausted just listening to you. Give us a sense of the scale of this. How many delegates, how many reporters, how many buses, whatever?
So we will have approximately 6,000 delegates. Those are credentialed delegates who've been elected in their states to come and conduct the business of the Democratic Party. But in addition to that, we have anywhere from 15,000 to 20,000 members of the media and another 10,000 or so guests, friends, lovers of the party who also come to share with us in this moment. So we have dozens of hotel rooms. We contract 15,000 hotel rooms. And that doesn't count the folks who get hotels outside of our block. We've put together, I think it's 500 buses. We create our own transportation system. We run miles of cable inside of the Wells Fargo Center. We set up our own telecommunications and technology network. We've got to have folks being able to access the internet that week. And so you're really kind of building a small city, a small temporary city, which lasts for about 2 weeks, and then it takes us a couple days to strike it all and restore the Wells Fargo Center and put the city back to normal after we're gone.
You said 15 to 20,000 media. Where will they work?
They will work in a variety of places. Some of them come with the networks and we give them space to create their own trailers and outfit themselves as what works for them. And then we create a media village at the site of the Wells Fargo Center and some of the convention center where they will conduct their work. They've all got to have power. They've got to have connectivity. They've got to have desks to put their laptops and tablets to work. And so we create a small little media village for them to work out of during the day.
As you look at this now, the convention is still months away. What's one thing on your agenda that you know is going to be a tough challenge?
I have the really great advantage of having done this before. So, as you know, I served as the CEO in 2008. So I have a little bit of experience. And so I don't know that there's anything that's really daunting. Every city is different. And so that's really where the unknowns come in, because we've not done it in Philadelphia in a number of years. But we are very fortunate to have a city infrastructure that has been tremendously helpful in helping us to navigate the particularities of Philadelphia itself. And of course, it's tremendously helpful that the Pope was just in Philadelphia. So they've got the experience of having recently held a massive event. Of course, that was much larger than anything we've got to manage. And so, you know, navigating the politics of the city, the particularities of a city, we come in for a year, me and my team. And so we're learning the city and the politics and the people and the communities as we are doing the logistics, which we know how to do. So that's always the biggest challenge for us, is to learn how the city works, how the city functions, what the community life is like. And that has to overlay the logistics that we do.
Okay. Take me back to the 2008 convention, the planning and staging of that. What was a moment, a tough moment, in running that convention, a moment where you said, oh, my heavens?
I think it was the moment that the Obama campaign came and told us that they wanted us to consider moving the fourth night of the convention to Invesco Field.
The stadium,
to the stadium. And that was the final decision on that was made July 4th weekend. So we had about 6 weeks to create a new logistics for a new venue. So the set had to be designed. We had to reroute our transportation systems. We had to figure out the security, how we were going to move the delegates. And it was really tough because although it was a challenge we relished, the fact of the matter was that there weren't enough magnetometers in the state of Colorado or in the three surrounding states to protect both the Pepsi Center and Invesco. So we had to make the decision to strike everything at Pepsi, dismantle all of the security, all the magnetometers, and ship it all over to Invesco, which will essentially mean that Pepsi was unprotected for that evening. So all of the media had to move overnight. So we were all watching our watches and our timepieces because we had to end at 11 o'clock on that Wednesday night in order to have enough time to completely flip everything and move it all over to Invesco. And so we actually moved things that night on golf carts over the highways after the delegates had left the arena. The moment the gavel went down at 11 o'clock, we started taking things apart, loading it on the golf carts, moving it over to Invesco, and we had just a few hours, really, from 11 o'clock until 2 o'clock the next day to reset the entire venue. So that was the hugest challenge we faced, and we did very well.
Did you sleep that night?
Not much. No, not much. And, you know, I wasn't driving one of the golf carts, but, you know, I was getting the hourly reports on what had moved and what the progress had been as we were shifting things and resetting for Invesco and what was happening at Pepsi at the same time. Pepsi had been our partner for the year, and so we wanted to leave the facility in as good a state as we could, even though we were ripping, you know, equipment out in a very short time frame. So it was a tough evening, a sleepless evening, and then I went over to Invesco early in the day, and my team did a fantastic job, and it was, you know, seamless, and folks came in that night and had a great time and saw a historic moment.
One more question about 2008. Is there one thing that you learned from the 2008 experience that will help you, or something maybe you, in retrospect, realize you might have done differently?
I think the key thing for us always to remember, and I was tremendously helped by having served as the chief of staff of the party, is that the convention is equally as important for the people who are in the facility, in the hall, as it is for people who are at home watching. And a lot of times, you know, we focus on the people who we see, who are right in front of us. And sometimes we forget about the people who are at home on their couches in Missouri watching this. And vice versa. The production people focus on the show and what people will see on television and forget what the experience is like for people who are actually in the hall. And so the one thing I take from that is that I've got to make sure that that balance is there, that the folks who are in Philadelphia, in Wells Fargo, are having as great an experience as the people who are at home watching it on television or listening to it on the radio. And that's a key consideration for us this time, how to balance those two things to ensure everyone has an excellent experience and walks away understanding our vision and our values and who our nominee is and the leadership we propose to provide.
This is, of course, a huge logistical challenge. It's also a political challenge. You're going to be dealing with political constituencies that are used to getting their way, have their own agendas. Give me an example that's something that you know is going to pose a political dilemma for you from time to time.
You know, we are the Big Tent Party, and I've been involved in party politics since 1989 when I first came to work for the DNC with Chairman Ron Brown. And so I'm accustomed to all of our party members who have sometimes conflicting goals. And, you know, with a convention, sometimes it's about who's on the speaking program and what time they speak and when they wanted to speak versus when they're slotted to speak. And, you know, are they there on time and where are they? And then sometimes it can get quite parochial about, you know, seating and credentials and that sort of thing. But I'm always gratified that in the end, I believe that when people tune in and pay attention, those edges don't really show. And so who didn't get to speak at what time is less important than that the overall message was delivered. And that's really my job, to keep people focused on the goal and to keep people focused on the reason that we are there. And we can work out all the intra-party, you know, battles and chatter and differences, as long as because we, you know, that's part of who we are as Democrats. We have a lot of different opinions and a lot of different views about things, but that's okay. We have one overriding vision, and that's what we're there to enforce at and inform at the convention. So, you know, we've had all kinds of challenges with people not being happy about something or other, but that happens every day in everyday life. Somebody's not happy about something, and you do the best you can to try to keep your eyes on the prize.
Right. And, well, and when things go smoothly and you have a show of unity, that's great for you. We're, of course, interested in what happens in the background. Do you get calls from some politician who say, my state has a terrible hotel assignment, it's too far from the center?
Well, you know, that does happen, and it used to happen quite a bit years ago. And what I chose, I've worked on every convention, almost every convention since 1992, is you make those decisions early and you involve people in the decision making. So, for example, in that particular scenario that you just said, we had our state chairs in a month ago. They saw all the hotels. They've given us their top five choices, and they will know by the end of the year where they're staying. So my lesson from my years of doing this is you involve people early in the process, help them help you make a decision, and then you lessen the opportunity for folks to complain at the back. They will know in December where they're staying next July. So that brings the temperature down quite a bit. And we're doing that with multiple Democratic Party groups across the country, our political partners, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, to our allies and labor. They've all been in and had their opportunity to kick the tires. And we hear the complaints now so we can address them, fix them. And so when they come in July, they can be focused on the issues. Now, there's some that get away. And yeah, there's some grumpiness because somebody's car didn't show up. But it tends to be the minor things. The lesson I've learned is you involve people on the major things on the front end. And at the back end, if there's complaining, it's about things that are small. And, you know, sometimes you can fix them and sometimes you can't. And you just have to appeal to people's better angels and say, I'm really sorry your car didn't show up. Really sorry. But, geez, we're about to vote on the nominee. Isn't that what you're here now? You're here now. And isn't that great?
or the view isn't good from my skybox.
Yeah. And it's like, well, you know what? There are a lot of people who wish they were in your skybox, because not everybody could get into a skybox. So let's count our blessings, you know. My grandmother used to say, you know, when you say, is the glass half full or the glass half empty? Well, it depends on whether you're drinking or you're pouring, right? So it's all about perspective. And so if you are lucky enough to be in a skybox, you should be really happy that you've got some place to go and to enjoy the show. So count your blessings and let's focus on what's really important here. And let's keep the main thing the main thing. And that's to nominate the next president of the United States.
I hear you're very detail oriented. How do you keep track of lots of stuff? Do you keep lists? Do you do it digitally?
Oh, yes, lists. I like lists, paper lists. I've tried the digital. It just doesn't work for me. I carry 5x7 note cards and I keep lists. And I also I should probably own stock in 3M. They make those Post-its. I love Post-its on a wall because I can put to-dos on the wall and when they're done, I throw the Post-it away. So, and I have a colorful system of Post-its and I've got my 5x7 cards that I carry with me all the time. I'm an incessant list maker. And it's how I keep up and keep track. And generally, my routine is the last thing I do at night before I say my prayers is to get everything out of my head and put it down on paper and add to my list. So, and then when I get up in the morning, I sleep with a clear mind, and I get up in the morning and I plunge through my list.
And you got youngins who can put it all on the cloud for you.
Yes, I've got a fantastic team that I assembled, and I love working with them. They're all talented, smarter than me, and you know they are the best in the business. And so you know I think that's part of my style and my leadership style. My leadership ethos is that you hire really great people, you give them clear direction and support, and you let them do their jobs and give them continual feedback. And so I've been very fortunate in 08 when I was running the convention, and now in 16 to have been able to find and hire great professionals who are first in their field and who are stellar managers. And so we're going to have a great time putting this convention together.
As many as 20,000 journalists may show up. Tell me about managing the media. What works? What do you have to keep in mind?
You know, you always keep in mind that you want them to be relatively happy, because they're covering our convention and they're providing, they are the conduit through which folks get news about what's happening in the convention city. At the same time, you know, some of members of the media can be a little grumpy, a little testy, but they're there to do a job. And my experience with them over these many years has been, my task is to give them the tools they need to do their jobs. So whether that's power, whether that's space, whether that's connectivity, that's my job.
And information, right? That's what they really want. They want the inside stuff.
They want the information. But it's both. They can have all the information in the world, but if they can't connect, if the outlets don't work, it doesn't matter that they have the information. Or they can have all the connectivity and don't have anything to report. So it's my job is to make sure they've got as much information as I can give them without doing their jobs, and to give them the tools that they need to accomplish their task. And that's what we try to do. And so next week, we have our fall media walkthrough, and 400 of my media friends are coming in to kick the tires and to take the tour and to tell us how they think the facility works for them, what they think they need that we haven't provided. We ask them point blank, what do you need? This is what we have. This is what we're planning. If there's anything that we are telling you that doesn't work, tell us now so we can fix it. Because we want the convention to be covered. We want the stories to be told, not just of what happens on the stage, but of the delegates who've come from Idaho or Guam or Dems Abroad or Alaska, and why they chose to invest their time and their energy and their resources in the convention. Those are great stories for folks back home. And so we try to give them what they need to do their jobs.
You are a Pentecostal reverend in a church in Washington and come from a long line of reverends. I wonder if heading a congregation and watching your father do it has imparted some political skill to you.
Well, yeah, I think there's probably no more political place than the church.
In what way?
You know, the church is, we like to think of it as a vaunted institution, but it's an institution made up of people, and people come with their own issues and challenges and aspirations and desires, and they bring that to church, and we hope that when they come, the ultimate goal, of course, is to be transformed into the likeness of the divine, and for us, that's the likeness of God and Jesus Christ. But along the way, their aspirations and hopes and ambitions come with them. And so there's a certain amount of, you know, people want to be head of this or chair of that, and the politics of church and by politics I mean the decision making process whereby, you know, you decide who decides what, when, where, why, and how, who gets what, when, where, why, and how. That all functions inside of the church too. The complicating factor, of course, is that no one wants to be blatantly ambitious, because that's unseemly. No one wants to be blatantly striving, because that's unseemly as well. So you have ambition and aspirations and all of that, but it's all layered over in sort of a piousness. So I contend that my early years, my life in the church as a pastor's kid, pastor's grandkid, prepared me, because you can navigate and decipher and recognize aspirations and ambitions a mile away. But for me also, being a pastor and having been a pastor's kid has empowered me, I think, to help people and to want to help people to be their best.
You know, it's interesting. A good reverend deals with people in kind ways, but also knows how to exude authority at the right moment. Do you think when people meet you in an office, in the many meetings that you'll have in the course of this project, do you think they would know that you're a reverend or sense that in some way?
I think what I've been told is that people understand when they meet me that there is a stillness and a calmness and a strength of spirit that I'm told they feel is rare in political circles, and that gives me sort of a quiet strength, I guess, is the term that someone told me recently. Now, whether they attribute that to faith or to upbringing, I'm not sure. But I think everybody who's chosen to share their feelings with me about what they think about me thinks that there's something a little bit unusual, little bit different.
Yeah, you can take control of a meeting without raising your voice.
Yes, I don't raise my voice.
Is it true there is a swear jar on your desk for those who use profanity? And what do you charge them?
25 cents. 25 cents per cuss word. If it's in the Bible, you don't have to pay. But any cuss words that's not in the Bible is 25 cents. And that's in my office. I only enforce that rule in my office, in my conference room. Elsewhere in the office, you're on your honor. I will not tell you that you cannot curse on your own office. That's on you. But in my space, I prefer not to have it.
One more thing. Does your job get easier if this nomination is resolved quickly? Would you rather see a nominee in March rather than June?
It's better for the party if the nominee is early. As far as we are concerned for convention plans, it cuts both ways. We had a late nominee in 2008, and there's, some minor advantage to that because when you have a nominee, then there's a certain amount of time that you spend with them once they become the presumptive nominee, briefing them and getting them up to speed on the planning. And sometimes that can distract you from the planning that needs to be done. But, it's probably six in one hand, half a dozen in the other. It's better for the party if we have a nominee early. We have more time to coalesce and to strategize and to implement general election plans if it's early. So my druthers this year are that it would be early. By our party's calendar, we should more than half the delegates will be awarded, I think, by mid-April. So it's around then that we should know if we have a presumptive nominee.
Let me ask you one more thing.
Sure.
How can you possibly do everything you need to do to put a convention together and still get back to your church and preach every Sunday?
I am very, very organized, and I have lots of help, both at church and at the convention. So I'm able to structure my time in order to do both. It means sometimes I'm up earlier than I'd like to be and I go to bed later than I want to. But, it's amazing what you can do when you have help and when you have time.
Do you write out your sermons?
Yes.
Saturday
night?
For
the most part. Sometimes it's bullet points. Sometimes I have a thought and I'll just riff off the thought. And then there are some times where the sermon comes to me and I actually do type it all out word for word. So it varies week to week. Sometimes, there's big news that happens on a Saturday. And so my whole sermon changes overnight.
Leah Daughtry, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you so much for having me.